rapidly changing world. That's what we decided to call the conversation. I will say a few words about myself. I will let everyone just introduce themselves, since maybe not everyone is familiar with everybody else, and then I will bring us into this conversation. I will talk for a while. I want to hear from all of you, but then I also really would like to open the discussion up to the audience so that you can ask questions or bring in your own experiences around these issues. So, as I said, Christina is my name, Christina Hogström-Ståhl, and I work with a research platform called PARS at the Faculty of Fine Applied and Performing Arts at the University of Gothenburg. My colleague Adding is sitting there, he's also one of the people running PARS. And we organize seminars, symposia, conferences. We also have a publication and work according to different themes at different times. And right now, there are three research themes that we're engaged in, and the one that I'm responsible for in the talk is a part of that, together with Art Sounds, professional engagements in politics and art. So in different ways, we want to think about how questions of gender, race, ethnicity, sexuality interact in the creating and curating of art, especially art that wants to have a political stake or is socially engaged in different ways. And we have already started having a discussion here about sort of what the political means, what our responsibility is, and I want to turn to those questions. But first, just a brief introduction of who you are. Let's start with you.
My name is Duyun, and I'm actually born and raised in Shanghai, China, and then I went to States for schools, and now I'm working based from New York City, also but split time actually between New York City and China really. I'm a composer and also I'm a performer, and for 4 years I was artist director of Malta Festival in New York, which is a festival that championing young composers from around the world. Right now I'm doing creating this festival called the Pan-Asia Festival that is to engage in more deep collaborations between regions. But it's the idea is it's actually a sprouting festival, I call it. So it's not, it doesn't, the location can be everywhere to reflect the changing world. And also I'm on council, you know, things for a number of festivals that just want to shake things up. Yeah.
Hi everyone, my name is Peter Burton. I'm from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. I'm the executive director of a music festival called the Suoni per il Popolo, which is an Italian name, and it means sounds for the people. And we put on about 140 concerts a year. And we're very like a genre plural event, so we do everything from punk rock and hip hop to electronica, sound art, free jazz, and new music. So we try and put a lot of creative practices all together on an equal plane and give people an idea of what's going on in contemporary music in Montreal. But so about half of our artists are local, and the other half come from all around the world.
Right. I'm the artistic director of the Gas Festival. I'm living here in Gothenburg, and actually in Verona, in Italy. I work as a professor in composition at the university, and as a sound artist. So it's a combination of things. Running this festival is in part, same description as Peter says, is this kind of diversity of different kind of genres and meetings around experimental music, seeking for something, try to make a change in one another's minds. Maybe, yeah.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Joost. I'm from Belgium. I'm working in a town called Kortrijk. Some people told me that Göteborg is a small town. Well, ours is one-fifth of Göteborg, so 75,000 people, so we're a small town. There's a very beautiful Sons for Drella, small town song, so it applies in many ways to our city. But we run an organization that is called Wilde Westen, so it's called Wild West, which is a clin d'œil to the fact that we're living in the west of the country, and we're organizing a multi-genre music organization, that presents as well classical music, contemporary music, pop rock, electronics, etc. And the main focus of our work, apart from a regular concert program, is that we have four festivals, which are not big festivals, but all festivals well defined. The first one is called Sonic City, who is a curator festival, where each time a adventurous rock and pop artist is curating the festival and making the choice of the people that should be presented during that festival. Last year was Thurston Moore who did the curation, and this year it's Courtney Barnett who is the curator of the festival. And the second festival is called Flanders Festival Kortrijk. Flanders Festival is a family of eight festivals in Flanders. It used to be a very bourgeois and classical type of festival, and we shake the tree and we did some quite other stuff with it. We present as well classical music, but also contemporary music, also sound art in it. And then we have a festival called Bos Forest, which happens in a natural domain, where we invite people to come and visit performances over there. And the last project we do is a exhibition on sound art, international sound art, which will happen now in October 18th.
Well, thank you. I also forgot to say that I'm actually not in the music and art sound scene, but work in theater as a director, but a lot with music theater, but that's a little bit different. So for this conversation, I was, as Stefan and I were talking about it, I was inspired by the artistic director's statement that you put online and some things. Do you mind if I read just a little bit from it?
Sure.
This is sort of, I think, on the sort of the paradox of the world that we're living in right now, with this increased globalism and easy access, and at the same time, growing nationalism that we see happening at the same time. Political landscapes are changing very quickly. Democracy, all of a sudden, is something that feels very fragile and put into peril. And the question is sort of what the place of the arts ends up being in this. And what you wrote is, paradoxically, we see how countries and their leaders choose to close their borders and build walls rather than opening up. This is happening right now when the need for dialogue has never been more urgent. We believe that art can help formulate critical questions, questions that we may not hold the answers to, but that can be part of an ongoing dialogue. It is our conviction that it's often more important to ask questions than to find actual answers. We believe in art that is bold enough to challenge and that dares to be uncomfortable, art that can problematize and that hopefully makes us question the world around us, art that refuses to give simple answers. And to me, you know, with the discussion that we just had at dinner, we were talking about, again, about the term political, and to me, this is sort of a way to understand what the term political could be. In the art world, sometimes politics becomes projected as something that is providing an answer that has an ideological push in a certain direction or that becomes more agitprop. But I think that this, the critical thinking about the world around us, there's a political potential in that, not least as we see national narratives becoming more singular, maybe in their approach, moving away from plurality. So that was sort of the prompt to have a conversation with you, since all of you work as artists but have a certain amount of influence also in programming and in curating. Can I ask each of you to just speak a little bit about the context that you're in? Like you said a little bit about the work that you do, but how do you feel faced with European and American nationalism, maybe, or maybe other influences? Like, what's your context? What's your situation right now? We'll start in this end and come the other way around.
Okay.
Does that seem good?
Well, it's not. There's no big difference as in, for instance, Sweden. You have been, I've been informed that also after the last elections, there has been a swing to the right, if we can call that, like this, which has happened also in other in our country, you feel that the idea about critical art is not so positively accepted anymore, and I think it's something that you feel through a number of things. First of all, it presents itself as a sort of accountability. People are very interested in figures if it's about, for instance, experimental and more searching art, because they're aware that you don't have the huge audiences there, but a seeking audience who is trying to not really find answers, but is interested in maybe find answers, but is interested in the questions that are raised through artworks and through artists. And that's one of the positions that people, that politicians try to do also, is a sort of objectivating this and to say, okay, is this still important? Is this still carried? It's, for instance, in Holland, there was a politician who called art, critical art, a left hobby, which was very clear what he meant. And he did not find it important, and for him it could be something that was not necessary anymore. And I think we have to be very aware of that and very vigilant about that. In our small city, in a city context, the situation is not that harsh, but we feel that, for instance, a criticism, a more, and I don't mean it in a kind of sexual way, but a more Puritan vision on how art should be, is also coming up and also put a lot in question.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think at that point we have to be very vigilant and aware that this freedom of speech and this freedom of expression through art and this raising of critical questions is still possible. And I think that's for me and something that is very important. We were talking about politics in a broader sense. I think you can separate amusement from meaningful art, and there's nothing wrong with amusement. If you want amusement, please let them do. But I'm rather interested in the art that raises questions. That is beautifully stated also in the passage you read. And in this context, it's a very political thing to work, even if it's not standing on the barricades, etc. But it's a very political thing to raise these questions through work. And I think it's important that curators now defend that, and that they take a stand for that, and that they find an audience and connect that to an audience. And I think that's important. And that's what we try to do also in the work that we present.
Thank you.
Is that an answer to your question?
It's a very answer.
Okay. Maybe I could connect a little bit here, because what I can see, we are looking for to work with the festival is to be the curator or artistic lead or whatever. It seems that I have to go back to myself as an artist, why I am an artist, why I do what I'm doing. I think it's this something kind of statement. It's just a kind of way to say, I am this kind of person, and no one can say this is wrong. So I think today maybe it's a festival like the Gas Festival and other festivals is kind of statements to say, this is something we stand for, this is important, even if you don't like it, it sounds horrible to listen to. It's have a value in different way. And I think it's, in one way, festivals, I think that the importance of a festival is that actually this happened. Even if it's a few people there, but it's you can read about, you can see it's there, and people have a kind of drive to make a, maybe a change, but the questionnaires start something, a movement. And I think it's sometimes in this area of experimental music, it's not about if we're 100 or 200 or you know, five persons in the audience. It's about that we actually say, this is important. Because in this climate, as you say about what's happening right now in Sweden and in many countries, it's even more important. So even start thinking, okay, oh, let's stop with this because it's too few people, there's no money or that. I think it's really important to stay there. On the barricades, man.
Well, I'm going to react to what Stefan and Joost have said because we do the same kind of programming. I can really identify with what you're saying about the value of the art and what it is and so on. But we're in a much lucky to be in a much more supportive environment. In Montreal, it's a large metropolis. Most people are bilingual, so it kind of comes with a certain open-mindedness. And there's an amazing funding structure there, which allows for a lot of art activity to occur. And that art activity is sort of actively defended by all the umbrella organizations. So if the government tries to have a cutback, you literally have thousands of artists on the street protesting. It's actually affected by-elections for the federal government, where their candidates have lost because of their opinion on the arts. Like, they've been critical of this kind of stuff, and they're kind of seen as, they suffer as a result. So we're lucky on that level. And the arts have been protected in Canada in a way that other things haven't. We had Prime Minister Stephen Harper for a long time, who forced research scientists, people like who were researching climate change or things in the environment in Canada, and he refused them permission to speak freely on their research to the media or in public. So it was actually speech control, right? And they shut down the national census that was used for policy making. So in order to know like how many youths are in a certain neighborhood or how many old people, so they can open hospitals or schools or whatever, the government actually actively shut down that process. But they didn't take on the arts because I think the arts were seen as a harder target. So that's our reality. But of course, everything that you're talking about, I find is terrifying. And particularly because we're next door to the States, and when you see the views that are being espoused there, I mean, just looking at the hearings for the Supreme Court, it's astounding that this person is being considered to be a Supreme Court judge. Mind-boggling. So that's our context.
Speaking of the States, I think the more I travel, you know, I move your location in between things, that the more I realize there is no set term for any terminologies. If you say political, if you say, you know, advocation or government or funding, there's so many, we are not talking about actually the same thing, if that makes sense. And even left and right in many regions are viewed differently. And the history of behind that too. For instance, New York City, I was just thinking that it's actually an easy city in a way that a lot of like artists' vote doesn't really matter in the government because it's always gonna go to the Democrat, right? So in other words, that I was thinking that how it's really important to also engage in people are not in those green states, are not in those not green states, blue states. Excuse me, green states. They're pretty green. But on the other hand, New York City is very hard to. On the surface, it's okay, but it's actually hard to get audience because at any given day you have 1,000 events running about, and people's attention is just. So it's about like finding the narrative that really connects with people. Also, we're just talking about how to really connect with your board members, but also funding. sponsors. In the States, it's mostly private. We don't get anything from the government. We get like 3%, if. In New York, most of people in the power are mostly Jewish. So they have their own certain set of ideas, perspectives, and history. Now, moving from New York, in the new China, for instance, all the funding are coming from the government. There's no question about it. We were just talking that. And the government has a set of rules. But they also didn't know what they want. So this, you can always find a freedom, like how to navigate through that. So in other words, it's not really productive to talk about the freedom to put in an artistic statement, to say we are, this is the freedom there, this, you know, thinking things. You cannot do that there because that will actually just shut down before anything started. But you can, there are actually, contrary to the popular belief, there are many, many decent artist work doing exactly, if not more, to the same thing that here they're doing. But it's just sort of like how to hone that language and how to, for me, I'm more interested in the end result. Mm. Is the end, by end result, is also the opening platform of what the dialogue really happened. Mm. Is after the concert, after the festival, after the event, what really remained in our replay effect. So that replay effect, sometimes you might have like a 10 audience, but maybe it's broadcast, or maybe that artist going back to their home region and then really think that they kind of have this agency. Now I see that a lot actually in Southeast Asia countries. Artists, they are trying so hard to have their own communities. And in a way, in the West, we can say, oh, why you need our approval? But sometimes it is not about approval. It's about that you feel that your voice being heard outside of your region, and someone outside in this world that care about what you want to say. And then that's kind of like a shot of energy so that you can go back to your region and community and really keep, you know, doing the thing that you do. And then you think there is some value in it. So I think that for artists, there is a huge fear of I'm just doing by myself. But once we know that we're doing with some type of dialogue, we can really have a bigger impact on many levels. If
that makes sense. I mean, so it seems that I don't mean to conflate any of the things that you're saying, but it seems that we are getting at something that's about sort of how do you make your statement. It seems like, for example, you're asserting the need to make a statement. Like, even if only 5 people show up, it's important to say that we're here. Whereas you're saying, actually, sometimes you need to also adjust the language or navigate the sort of the expectations and needs of the people who would provide funding in order to be able to get somewhere.
Not just funding. It's about also shut down or not
right.
Shut down.
Yes, having the space.
Having the space and having the ability to even to survive.
Mm.
Right. So what you see, those people get protested, people get arrested.
Yeah.
But that's like a 3 people.
Mm.
But then what happens is that the community actually got shut down.
Right.
And that's uncool.
Yeah.
Right. So when you think about I'm talking about in different locations it has different set of problems.
Right.
Right. So in the States there's the funding and then it's the direct funding
yes.
like that. And in regions when funding could be having so much fund and then they don't know and then how to navigate that. So it's not about to say the word that other people to please the audience or to please however, but it's about knowing what we really want to achieve in the end, and then find a way to survive, but also to engage, and also to have a meaningful one that it's going to be fun, exciting, and absolutely utter serious.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Well, can I respond to something that you said there, because that's sort of what I was thinking about, the knowing what it is that you want in the end, right? It seems that the kind of climate that we're in, I mean, regardless of the different conditions, seems to require that sort of clarity of vision, of knowing what you want so that you can pursue it. Do you? I don't know where to start to ask. No, it's interesting to me, this idea of having this vision. Like, how do you know that you know? Like, is that a starting point for each and every one of you in the work that you do?
How do you know that you know?
Yeah, or this, the knowing that you're talking, the important thing is to know what you really want, is what you just said, to be able to achieve it.
In a broad sense, you know what you want.
Yes.
But sometimes it requires a lot of experimenting
and
a lot of mudding around
to
find out how to get there. Sometimes it's constantly working and reorientating how you could do that, and sometimes it's not changing your mind in a general way, but it's sometimes you have to adapt how you work on certain things because you have been naive at certain points, or you have been you got it totally wrong how to get to certain audiences or how to work with certain artists. So I think it's in a general way you know where you will head to, and you know that you want to defend these artists that have what I just explained, and you know that you want to reach them and to bring them in contact with an audience that you know very well. But the way is not a straight path, it's something that you have to discover each day working. And by doing it a number of years, of course you have a certain way in doing so, but that's the dangerous point.
Yeah.
When you think you know that you know how you have to do it, sometimes that's one of the people who come with a hard criticism, and it's I think the important thing is to stay open for that and not to say, okay, this criticism directly, okay, they're right, but to investigate for yourself what's in it that's worthwhile to listen to. So I think it's about keeping that mind open and to see how you get there in the end.
I guess for us it's, we always want to have exciting events that seem worthwhile and important to us, and so I guess we kind of work with the idea that either we're really excited by the show personally, or we're working with a partner and they're really excited by a concert, and that's often a big starting point for us. And we often work with younger presenters because every year I get older. And so it's really, and maybe my ideas are not evolving as fast as everything that's going on. So for me, it's really important to work with other programmers and to have a programming committee of enthusiastic people who are always bringing in new ideas. And sometimes it's good. Like, sometimes I think an idea is terrible. But this person really seems to believe in it. So I trust their passion and their excitement. And oftentimes that takes you to really good places. So that's sometimes what's one of the ways we know. And also, I guess, or one of the things we're really trying to do is to have good audiences for our events. Because we do get grant funding, so we kind of have we feel, because there's a critical mass of people in our city who are really interested in this kind of thing. We have a huge number of artists in Montreal. When they do the census statistics, when they actually do the census, you can see per capita that there's more artists there than pretty well anywhere else in the country. So that means a lot of these people have a professional interest to go and see contemporary things because it's kind of their job to know about these things. So we want a decent audience there. So our big struggle always is how to connect with people and get people out, given that the media system is kind of broken down. And so we're dealing with this social media as a way of promoting our events, but social media is really creepy. So it's trying to figure out how to build connections with people when the shows are very different. So the audience for
a transgender electronic artist could be very different than a new music event or whatever. So you're dealing with different constituencies, but always trying to bring out the natural constituencies for different events.
Mm-hmm. Not everyone has to address everything if you don't want to, but if you want to, you should jump in. That's how I feel.
I was thinking maybe it's a little bit other angle.
Yeah.
I was thinking sometimes for me, quite often, I mean, like music is, how to put it? Yeah. It's not sharp enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's this, I can be this kind of, okay, I have been an actor, or I've been able to write that kind of texts or something. It should be much more sharp where you can say directly what you want. Music is very unclear. You can listen to it, and of course, there's the beauty of it, and you can find out different ways of what you get, but how you read it, all right? But so sometimes for me, it says, first of all, okay, we make festivals great, it's kind of entertainment, even if it's a little bit complex, it sounds weird for some people, right? But what about just stand on a square and scream? It's maybe that's better, to make a difference, make a change, to say something. Or you have to be very, very clear what kind of genre, what you're saying, what kind of, you have like Peter Punk bands, which maybe is more angry than our chamber ensemble tonight. Is that better? I don't know. This kind of values is very complicated. And sometimes I can get really bored of this kind of culture bubble, this kind of all believers of in culture and art. I was like, we understand and we are together. I wonder if we really make a change.
I think in some ways we can. Just because that's also why our curators got criticized, right? Because the power of you are able to select people, and that kind of selection process get people's word, and that's why people have that reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
Is everyone wants to be heard.
Yeah.
So for instance, the reason I say that is I think in the States nowadays, you know, we actually did this initiative called Music from the Islamic World. Just doing that itself is a statement.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sort of like fuck you, you know, to the government, because the government doesn't give. It's a simple thing, right? It's a simple policy. When they don't give the visas at all to artists from Iran,
mm-hmm.
we'll be like, we are going to find a way. Not even if we cannot bring them there, it can be a Skype interview. They stayed up, you know, and then when people see their face, big screen before their pieces or after the pieces, that's a statement in itself.
Definitely.
That's. Because that's the voice that we want. It's like, do you like that string quartet? Well, that's another conversation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But also that's also another thing is that for them to know, oh, some people inside that country, this is not, you know, because when you turn on the news, CNN, it's all about all those one narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Other people's narrative, our voices don't get heard until we have some sort of this synergy like this, right? So you can have three audiences, you can have 1,000 audiences, but it's about like how are those artists being heard. And for instance, punk, you know, punk art, or noise art that in China now, it's actually have this like underground scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you present a noise music concert in New York, it's okay. It's like, okay, cool, you know, whatever, right? So, but it's gonna be like, oh, that's cool art. Yeah, it's like dope. But then you go to like countries that it's not really often practiced that way. Like people say, that's amazing. That's the change that we can bring. Not to say that it's a disruption, but it's also the engagement, and it's about what can be seen. And that, to me, is the positive
yeah.
aspect.
Mm, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, part of my job and the people in our office is to fight for access for artists. So we have to deal with visa issues and work permit problems. And people who are coming to Canada but are terrified to fly through the States. So we have to reroute them around the States to get to Canada, because otherwise they won't come. But the big thing is visas. So for example, when artists are coming from the Middle East, like we rate not as much as we like Egypt, Syria, and Lebanon. So it's always a battle because the Canadian government has privatized the visa system. And these companies go to working artists and say, we need your passport for 4 weeks while we process your application. And the artist is, well, like, next week I'm in Romania, da, 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 da. You can't take my passport, right? So we always have to find ways around these things. And that's definitely part of our job, is to facilitate, pull levers on our side, do whatever we have to do to get the access,
and
for sure.
And maybe end the table, too.
Of course, that's part of the whole thing, right? But I mean, that's maybe not something you talk about publicly so much, but there's always ways.
I won't put that in the
transcript.
Recording.
Yeah.
Well, can we stay with this question a little bit? You're talking about access, as you're saying, and sort of winding the international the possibility for collaboration or inviting people, but there's also something about the constituencies, as you said, being different for different genres or different groups. And this is also returning to the sort of conversation that we initiated around, quite frankly, you know, new music, experimental music, being a very predominantly sort of white, at least in the West, you know, white middle class scene. And how do you work with that? How do you cope with that?
Who wants us to do that one?
You can start.
I mean, look at us.
All of us
are
the same.
Well, it's a very complicated issue, because not only are you talking about audience, you're also talking about the vast amounts of money that go into maintaining ensembles. So they, in music world, new music ensembles get a disproportionate amount of the funding. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to equalize things, then the funding needs to go around to other genres and other types of creative activity. So there's that whole argument which you have to make to funders and to umbrella organizations. But in Montreal, there's a divide between old school new music presenters who are much older, and I kind of call to myself Stalinists. Because they're very like, you know, we have the best culture, we have the best music, and we only present music in white cubes or in theaters or whatever. Like, we have a very firm aesthetic on what it is, and we're maintaining these great European standards, essentially. But I was talking about attendance before, and our battle is that we put on similar events in more popular venues, and we will get 150 people at a concert, or 120 or something, and they'll have like 12. So
artistic success.
It's, I think so. Yeah, because we're programming the same types of music. So I think that.
I mean, sorry.
You mean having a narrow audience?
But I mean, it emphasizes a certain, I don't know, disconnect, right?
Yeah.
But we're also thinking about diversifying the musicians. So Julius Eastman, I don't know if people are familiar with Julius Eastman, who's African-American queer composer, who was really active in the 70s and 80s, and he died of HIV, he died homeless, and he was kind of shunned by the new music establishment in the United States. And he's a great composer and performer, singer. So his work has really been revived and performed, but then the question becomes, well, who's going to be in the ensembles to perform this? And how do you accommodate professionally trained musicians who play in other genres but who are not trained in new music? Mm-hmm. And this is an ongoing discussion and debate, and it's not resolved. But we're actively looking for African-American musicians to play this musicians' music, because it'll be a better performance, and it'll challenge this reality that we're talking about.
It's a very good question, and it actually has many sides to it. First of all, let me start with, I think our educational system needs to be also revived and changed. And I think that I also teach too. But sometimes it's horrifying to see how much, how little scholarship is available just to all people who are in really in need. When we are talking about race and gender and sexuality, but we're also not talking about the economical class. And that is something, a deeper question, is who get the resource to get what exposure to what? So those are things that really need to be stand hand in hand with all those other check off boxes, isn't it? And then the other thing that I think as a festival director or something, that I think we just cannot afford to be tokenism. And once you have the check boxes, then you're really not doing anyone, any community, any services. It's actually going backwards, because you can pat your shoulder and be like, oh, look at how great we have been doing all those things. What happens is you're actually doing more disruptive things to the original communities, because they're like, this is bullshit. And they feel they're being exploited, you know, in a way. So it's sort of like we need to have a deeper understanding of what we're really talking about diversity. When we are talking about diversity, is it the content? Is the symbolism? Is who we stand for? In all that, right? The other thing is that I think the idea of either contemporary music or music or free music or jazz music, I think, you know, it's some sort of way that we as a festival, we do need to have some sort of like label to it. But then, you know, artists, the young people, they don't, who cares, you know, like, you just jump from being thing. So, but I think that we can also encourage this real deep collaborations. By that, I mean having a new, like, having this freedom to be able to do this new form of art. Hear me out, right? So I think that it's okay if white people play my music, for instance. If it's only non-white people play my music but not understanding, then I think it's less interesting. But then it's hard to really, but then sometimes there is a statement to say, let's really put those people on stage, that to because statement is important, right? Again, that's like in response to what I was saying earlier. My mind is going a little bit different places because it's really because of the complicated thing, you know. I also like that I don't have a simple answer to things. But also, I think in other regions, music to the people means very different things. The other project and initiative that I'm doing now is the folk music. Really have new works that rooted in folk music, and just not like a folk music redoing, but a really, because for them that's real, that's music. But how do you really have new works combining with that, and how do we not just standing from region to region, but really having something else? I don't have a clear answer to that, but the initiative is happening and it's actually amazing, because sometimes when you're in this audience, or actually like, is it okay to put them? Do they really can do it? But no, I mean, if you put people really understanding with making a work from ground up, somehow that happens. What's the worst is you have an idea, you're like, okay, this one comes from there, and then put them in a room, and see you later in 3 months, oh, that's like a monkey in a cage situation. So that's, yeah.
I just want to add to that that we sometimes incredibly naive. In this way that we try to, our aim is to get an as diverse audience as possible. So the only thing you can dream about things, but the only thing is that you also diversify your program. That's one of the things that you can do. But then, for instance, and I'm talking out of own practice, there's a Tunisian oud player in your festival or in your venue. And then suddenly say, okay, we have to work with that. We have to work with that. We have to go to the Tunisian
yes.
community. So we bombard the Tunisian community with all information about this kind of, and it's not, there's no bad karma in it, but it's like you want to do it right, and you bombard them with all the information about this. Only you forget that, we're talking in Flanders, that about 5% of the people go regularly to concerts. And you think that the 27 Tunisian people who live in Kortrijk, or I'm exaggerating here, of course, they're all interested in Tunisian oud players. So
exactly.
And that is so naive. I think we have to be very realistic in that. And this we don't bombard them anymore with information. We try to go and see via, amongst others, intermediate figures, if people have a connection with that kind of music. And sometimes they say, I'm sorry, no one is interested in old Tunisian music. And then you say, okay. But still, you want to defend the music because it's so beautiful music. And sometimes it's good that, for instance, sometimes you do a very diversity thing by presenting this music to a wide audience who is not does not have the habit to come and listen to this kind of music. So it's a plea for me to be very realistic in that and to not see them as a target group which you should very much jump yourself on it. And I think that's but it's a very different, difficult balance how you should do it. Diversity is for me, it's a, you were talking about experimental and new music, but in classical music it's even worse. We think about classical music, about that's something that is Western, and we go back to polyphonic music, etc. You can go a bit earlier, so that's Western classical serious music. There's a lot of fun in classical music also, but people tend to forget that also. But then you have also these traditions who date from way back, even before polyphonic music, and who have Eastern traditions, Sufi traditions, etc. You have a number of them who date before that. And then suddenly we talk about world music. And there's a little twitch in that you mean, oh, yeah, this is also good music, but it's not so serious as classical music. So I think it's also, if you put on a festival, and you, for instance, I'm doing a festival with classical music and contemporary music together, I think it's very important to really be aware of that question. And we, for instance, try to do each festival 2 to 3 concerts, which are, the music is not from a Western origin, but we present it to people. And sometimes with a very uneasy effect that people say, well, this was very strange. But I think by doing so, you get them aware of things happening. That's what I want to do at.
Yeah.
Respond to something you're saying?
Yes, you can.
Okay. I'm just thinking about the importance of listening to other communities. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you may think an artist is from a place and people from that place will be interested in them. But sometimes the other way around is to, if there's someone in a community who's obviously really interested in music, then you say, well, what do you like? And then you say, well, I'm really into Tunisian hip-hop from Paris or something like
yeah.
that. So, and then
the
I,
case, even.
Yeah, and so, okay, so, and then you say, well, who would you like to bring? And
yeah.
then, well, I love this artist, so why don't we bring them?
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring them, and then you have a show, and it's like crazy. but so it's sometimes the way that you work, you know.
Absolutely, I'll bring experts that really know not just the region, but know the style and know the work is super important. But sometimes it's okay to have Tunisian oud to play to white people, and I think that white people should hear Tunisian oud. But it's also Tunisian oud is just it's. I think that itself is a ridiculous statement. It's sort of like, oh, I bring a violin piece to Vietnam, and like what? Like it's just a violin, you know, but what are we bringing? And what? And I really agree with what Peter was saying, that because what people are really interested in things that we cannot know until they tell you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, don't assume that you must really like what we know, that we think that you should be interested in. Everyone is listening to hip-hop. If you go to Tibet, it's like hip-hop everywhere. It's not a Tibetan thing that you know. No, really, like, people, it's just a thing, it's actually kind of awesome, you know? I was like yeah. And they do their own way, and there's that kind of hip-hop is completely, like, combined with the traditions into the beat. It's also different, so you really open up this and another knowledge of what needs to... Qawwali singers, another thing from Pakistan, things, they have a huge school, different schools. There's the masters, and then the Coke studio, who, like, have the population. So you really need to really do some research. And
talk to the experts.
Exactly. And who do we really... Are the gatekeepers are we talking to? Mm-hmm. Or are we really... You know, all those things, yeah.
What makes me think about, as a parallel with some of the student protest movements that we've seen in different parts of the world, I'm thinking in Britain, in South Africa, and different places where students are protesting against diversity, saying we don't want diversity, we want to decolonize the curriculum, which is something completely different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which part?
Who is...
student movements in Britain, for example, several universities in South Africa, where they're calling not for being included in diversity programs on the university's terms, but they want to decolonize the curriculum, which is to say to change the perspective entirely. And that, you know, I'm thinking about it when you speak about the Western canon of music, for example, the assumption that everything else would be world music, as if this is not the world, and that there's a perspective in that, and even in this move to be inclusive or to bring new audiences, that it still hasn't changed the core perspective. Do you see what I'm saying? I think there's a risk of that. Like, I guess what I'm after is, if you think that the thing to do really is to rethink the premises for how we curate and program and organize these events, and at the same time, there's this, coming back to what we were talking about before, there's this pressure, politically also, to be specific and to feed certain kinds of narratives for funding, for visibility, for viability. What do you do? I'm not asking any easy questions tonight. That's not my aim. Do you see what I'm asking? Like, can you both rethink the premises of what you're doing and still pragmatically go about it? Like, what is that?
I think so.
Yes.
In Canada, we have a grant system that's it's your peers. We're put on a jury, and the projects are submitted to a jury, and they get to decide whether or not your project is going to be funded. There are some caveats to that, but they have a huge influence on it. So what I try and do in grant applications is make an argument for why doing things in this way, like turning things on their head and everything, is actually really exciting and really important.
Like, so you were saying before, that depending on how you define experimental, for example, if we assume that that only includes certain groups,
then you have to explode that.
Right, so that...
But, and there was, and there's a lot of really good arguments for doing it, and partly it's getting away from feeling like everything is stayed, and partly it's because, well, when you do that, there's this whole other crowd that comes out, and it's a lot of... You know, it's an amazing amount of fun and deeply satisfying for everyone. And people want to come back, and they're saying, okay, now bring this artist, or this new record is out, you know, listen to this. And so you can, for the funding authorities we have, they will listen to it. Mm-hmm. But we're not dealing with fascists, you know.
Right.
And how you deal with that reality, I don't know. It's
I still don't really understand.
What I'm asking about, I think what I'm getting the sense of is that in different ways you're pointing at the need to not just think from an already established given perspective, how can we get new people to come to this, or like how do we introduce that oud player, or you know, that we're getting at, that, that sometimes you end up being stuck in the same perspective, even when you think you're opening up. And so it made me think of how these students have been making demands to not just diversify and make more people be included, but to really rethink the premise for how we are taught things or how we make music. Or how
I think they're right.
That's what I think,
yeah.
too. But I'm also saying that that then means revising all systems. And if you still need to operate within systems for visibility or for funding, what are ways of making those things work together?
That's just to have to think like an artist. think like the practitioner,
mm-hmm.
right? Like what's their struggle,
mm-hmm.
and why they have that urge,
mm-hmm.
and where that urge comes from. And I think that also as an artistic director, if we understand that too, that's an easier dialogue. The other thing is that, you know, and who controls narrative, you know, the sort of like classical music being the serious one and the other was not serious. It was like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you think about those things, music, there's practiced music in there, there's religious music in everywhere, every part of the world. And it's, in the end, it's always about the exaltation,
mm-hmm.
this the transcendence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no one will say that's not serious, because it's about the path, the music. Quality music, the music is the path to the beloved. The beloved is the path to the God, to something that's greater than it. So the music is actually so serious that it's actually more serious than a lot of string quartet pieces, you know? And because you're a piece of dealing with a sonata form, what? You know, it's just that form. And I think that the narrative of what that music is about is, we need to really revisit that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need to have educational and outreach maybe initiative is, how do we really talk about, can we really listen? And I going back to the hip hop phenomenon is that I do have to say, hip hop is the one of the most listened to genre in China now, and it's actually because of one of the program that was reality program last year happened. So everyone is doing hip hop, and it's actually really cool hip hop. So that's amazing, because then you're seeing this whole China is dealing with experimental hip hop beats with all their Chinese languages and the literature. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, to me, that's the rigor of same as contemporary music, because that's also experimentation to the sound, experimentation to the form, and exploration of the content. So that's the premise of how
sure.
do we really.
But what I learned is that, for instance, I was referring to one festival we do in, which is called Boss Forest. What we, as we are a multi-genre organization, this festival presents about 20 concerts on one day, and we are really mingling what is in it. It can be some experimental pop rock, but it can be very experimental new music. It can be electronics. It can be, and what I understand that. In certain settings, people really eat it.
Mm-hmm.
It is, for them, it's no problem at all to, and that's hopeful. I think that's a very hopeful sign, that we see that people walk from one stage to another. It's all small stages and all in a setting that people feel themselves very okay and no pressure. People walk from one stage to another and say, voila, very happy that I listened to that, but because I've never knew of this guy or girl, and I think that's if you experiment with ways of presenting, we also experimented, and it's not a new thing, but it can help. We experiment with concerts in small contexts and living rooms and in spaces that are public spaces, etc. Like sound art, we present also in places that are very familiar to people, like historic monuments in our city, and in that way you get sometimes to a very interesting conversation with your audience, and that's what makes me hopeful, that If you would put this in a context, which is you open the doors of a theater and say, well, let's come in, sometimes it's more difficult than if you diversify your ways of presenting things. And it's not always easy, because you have to get out of your comfort zone, of your known environment where you work, and you have to get into the wild, so to say, even if the wild is very limited. But I think it's interesting to experiment with it.
Yeah,
Dave?
We'll open up to some questions after this, I think.
Yeah. I'll make a quick point. Here's spot on, and just changing the location of music and putting it in the right context is huge. Like, I think there's a lot going on in musicology. We're kind of in a golden era with all this writing on music. And one of the interesting books that's out there is David Byrne from Talking Heads, his book How Music Works, which is a very simple book. But he dedicates a chapter to a venue in New York City that was really crucial for New Wave and everything, and CBGBs, which a lot of people will have heard of. But he talks in great detail why that venue worked for that community and how it enabled this creative explosion, right? And I think we can all reproduce that mindset in our own cities by finding places that have the right, I don't know, vector of forces that allow for the magic you were talking about to happen, right?
And also, audience in different cities had their different listening habit, and also according to the season, too, right? So you, your brand is, and so you have a brand, you know. Even for me, because for me as an audience, I think, okay, Peter is specialist, amazing. Go, really listen to different things. In New York, like different festivals have different psyches, that people pick their different psyches and kind of lock their psyches into that. In Germany, the Contemporary Music Festival can be, people actually travel to those, you know, pilgrimage, make those pilgrimage. And even that, if you deal with the most rigid audience, that they're like, this is what we know as a contemporary music, means things. And I think that it's sometimes about how we are dealing with our disruptions. Because it's when people are upset, what are they afraid of? So those are the questions that I ask myself too. Like, what do they feel that endangered? Are they feeling like they have no longer of the other things are not being heard, or what? So understanding of that is also how I think about the programming and putting the right audience, putting the right artist to how to have the right conversation. If that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah. Do you want to add something else?
Just thinking about well, we start talking about maybe change. You know, I think it's about we have to expose ourselves much more. We have done some kind of concerts directly in shopping malls and like that. And I have to say, we'll have one big one here in town where most of the people who's coming from the suburbs coming there shopping. This is like 100,000 now over there. So we put an ensemble playing normal contemporary music in the middle of that. And people, stand and listen. I'm sure quite fascinated about how this possible, or it sounds weird. But they stop, because we are there. They don't come to us. I don't say to make a change for them, but it's just one way for us, I say, to expose. Another example, I have a festival in Verona. This is street art festivals with music performances, one in public places, street squares, and so on. One year was beautiful. As a performance group, and they put bed in the front of the shop, directly on the street, sidewalk, right? After a while, they called the police and said, oh, there's something weird happening outside. The police come, and the police go to the art and say, what's that? Do you call this art? I think that's lovely. They start having a dialogue about, not if it's good, legal or not. This is really awesome. So I think that's a way to just go in that direction next week.
And ask the question.
Where people can get, how to say it, they define it as this is our place, and I feel safe. I don't have to be addressed in a correct way in black or something, or somebody to be a part of it. I can go there and just see and hear things. I think that's beautiful.
Can I open up to the audience?
Yeah.
Any questions? No.
I can start.
Please.
I mean, I'm thinking, I've heard a little bit about how you're dealing with it from an organizational point of view, but to be maybe a bit provocative and make caricatures, I mean, if we think about politics, it's about representation, right? And we think in certain parts about democracy, but then on the other side, the arts seem to be kind of all about the expert, the elite, the professional, word of mouth, recommendations through networks and so forth. So how do you deal with this? Because it seems to be a built-in dilemma, organizationally.
Do you mean board of directors, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, it can't be how you connect to the community also, but how do you deal with this dilemma of, there seems almost to be an inbuilt dilemma in the arts of being slightly anti-democratic, in one way.
I guess it's true, it's not like there's an election every year where they vote, like, which free jazz concert people will put on, for sure. But there are things that you can do, because if you redefine the term of expert, I think that's really important.
Yes.
So that you don't, for example, just consider people who have a PhD in, I guess, ancient music or something as the experts, and that you look at many types of expertise. So in Canada, it could be First Nations person who is deeply knowledgeable about traditional music practices, and they could be someone you would be talking to about programming a concert during your festival, and they would tell you exactly how you have to do that. You need a ceremony, can it be in this room, what time of day it might have to be at, whatever, all these things. And that's an expert, but it's a very different kind of expert than maybe the ones you're talking about. So that's definitely one thing you have to think about. And the other thing is that if you keep all the curatorial control with one or two people, like at a festival where you have a lead curator or whatever, then you increase that effect dramatically. And you can decrease it by having programming committees and assembling that committee with different kinds of people, different ages, different backgrounds, different identities, and getting their feedback overall on what's being done, and then also getting their specific suggestions about what they think should be included in the festival. But you'll never get you're never going to get a fully democratic process, I guess.
Sure.
Yep.
It's a lifelong effort. I really think so. I think that sometimes it takes a lot of generosity to be willing to hear other people, to really to be able to also willing to travel, not to fairs, not to festivals, not only to that, but really to understanding the diversity of where you're going and where in the cities that you're going or villages, however, depending on who are you, what's the music that you wanted to program, right? One of the festivals I'm involved with now, actually, there are four people on something like this, and then we each get like a certain amount of travel fee, and the thing is that, you know, it's about like how you use that travel fee.
It's not like you just check off the conservatories, the festivals. But it's idea, I mean, for me, I know that I want to go to a certain region and go to the homes. Mm-hmm. And especially for certain regions that they're going to the singing, the musician's home is so important, and then you will really understand what that network is. Because that network is not the industry network that we know in the West or in big countries. So it's the sort of, we can talk the talk, but then we really need to also engage and also just the danger of it too. The danger being just how willing do you really want to travel, right? Mm. So and how much willing that, and then you still, I think in the end, someone needs to have an artist say, like someone had to stand up, stand behind the conviction, say in the end it is about a taste, it is about selection, right? So I feel like I cannot pretend that it's not about that. Even with a programming committee, even for the people who come that, so it is about a statement. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's re-examine that statement. Mm-hmm. So that's what my practice is.
Mm-hmm. Before we go on, let me just say for the people who came in, if you want to come around and sit over here, there are chairs, there's a seat next to me, don't feel shy. You want to say that it's fine too. We're just
going to
keep talking for a little bit longer.
Okay.
Yes, please.
I think Union used the word which was important for me, which was gatekeeper.
Yes.
We had a huge discussion at Flounders going on in the end of the 90s, beginning of the year 2000, about our program was gatekeepers by narrow, what you call them, not rivers, but what's smaller than a river, big
streams.
So not stream, but the small things. you understand what I say. So are we gatekeepers and are we closing the gates too often to our own taste? I think there's a number of things going on for the moment. You see more and more that when people are getting a job in artistic curator or artistic director, that a certain term is also attached to it. So that, for instance, it's for 4 or 5 years, and that it's only one time that you can renew it, for instance, which is still 10 years, I know, but still it's also an expression that they want also other people that are in charge of making choices, and it's not only one who is in charge. And I think as a gatekeeper, and you cannot, you can make it more beautiful than you want, but in fact, you are a gatekeeper. At a certain point, you are a gatekeeper. But it is, I think it's, first of all, to see what international context is going on, but secondly, also to really know what's happening inside your community, inside what's happening, and to not close the gate for what is happening there, but in the contrary, to open these gates and to make sure that people who have an interesting point of view can express themselves also within your organizations. And I see too little that this, it's happening more and more. There's a sort of democratization also process in the arts, where audiences have freedom of speech also towards the organization, etc. But still too little is this kind of thing happening. And I think you have to be very aware what is happening around you and make sure that your gates are open enough.
And maybe hiring admin staff and thinking about diversity within the full-time staff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm. And diversity, and also diversity in taste, yeah, as well.
Yes,
I think,
yes,
that's very important.
And in board of directors.
In the whole, at every level. Yeah.
Every level. Yeah. And also, every level, also funding organizations too, that the jury selections, the competition, all that, the school, the university, who gets to say what, and that just takes so much more work, but it can.
maybe a bit of an example of this, what we are doing right now, that I have four curators,
yeah,
here at the festival, working with me, and actually I'm not in charge now in total. That's great. So for
you could throw mud at us.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's one way to open up a bit, even if still expertise, of course. The other way around, I think it's very interesting to start, if it's possible to get in contact with people that we want.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. If that's possible, this is a great thing. I like it very much. Good.
Yes. I thank you for the interesting point of view. So, something that was so interesting for me was that the curator's role is to including and excluding, and it's about statement and where you're standing as a human with political, philosophical point of view. So when you're curating as music, it's not my work. I'm in base. I'm artist, visual artist, and work with art, movie, art film, video art. But I have experienced when you get so radical, when you are curating with very political point of view, have you experienced that you lose your public when it gets so radical choices? And if it's yes or not, how do you deal with it to move on? I don't know. I think it's a little bit different with music because it's good to hear it. But have you experienced that when you get very specific, you should think about your public?
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely. I say for to have a festival like this is the question all the time. But and that's really tricky. It's really tricky because of course if you find something that this is really interesting, I think this can be something. At the same time, you know that I don't know. Maybe it's just coming five persons. So it's not involved at all. They don't know the name or anything. So it's always about that kind of. If you go for a big name, Laurie Anderson will be at the concert hall. Yeah, we had a lot of people, of course. But if you go in another direction, you never know. So I think this is the problem. This is really.
Well, for example, in music, say in new music, one of the big questions is female composers. And female composers are underrepresented. And as a programmer, it's challenging for you because, well, geez, I need to sell some tickets so that I can pay the bills. So, but you also take the risk that you're talking about. The good thing is that audiences actually respond really well. And people are open and curious. So to me, the risk is not as big, and perhaps the risk, there's, to flip it the other way, maybe the risk is bigger by not taking those chances, because
yes.
People are going to be bored, and things, there's a lot going on, and you need to really sort of attract people's attention, so by bringing in different artists, it's good, and all that. For this reason, it's good, but I'll add another point too. It's by also thinking about how well established people are. So if you are going to do difficult material, it's great to have younger emerging artists, but it's also really helps to have someone who has a name and is older and well established. And by mixing those types of, say, female composers together, then you can have an amazing audience and with really outspoken artists. So it's kind of your job to solve that jigsaw puzzle.
I think it's really beautiful that what you said about people get bored, right? Like this thing. I think to me it's always don't discredit our audience's wisdoms.
Yeah.
And I hate to see cultural import and the cultural export. So that it's sort of like the world fair, yeah. So the expo fair that. Sometimes when you travel through biennials and especially in the art world, don't get me started.
Mm-hmm.
It's you, the same group of international artists being represented everywhere, and you,
yeah.
you, 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 by the fifth biennial you go to, you forget where you are because it's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe it's a different statement, really, like a different statement about your direction, but it really is the same, again, same thing. So, but then there is the practicality of it, right? Like there is the admission and all that. And to me, it's, I think, so great. So, yes, if we actually take more risks, if we don't take risks. And it is about proportions, and I think in the practical quality point of view, it's about understanding what can you lose, and you have to just like risk losing.
And frankly, you have a moral obligation to
absolutely
do these things. So it's better to go out of business doing the right thing,
yes,
than just to, I don't know, punch in your and punch out at your job all the time and never take any chances. Like, it's a creative process, so you have to take chances.
And from an economical point of view, please be realistic. Because sometimes I heard people say, yeah, we had those, it was only five people, it was a great concert. I never felt good if there's a concert with five people, because I feel that there's an obligation to have a critical, not critical, well, a critical and a critical mass also to present. If you do a concert, that you have at least an audience to let these musicians perform to. But in another way, it's also not realistic to say, okay, this is highly experimental stuff or highly difficult music, so I will say 200 and then say afterwards, okay, we didn't got there. You have to be realistic in these kind of things. And this is context-based. Sometimes, in a very tiny town where there's an experience of presenting contemporary music and experimental music, sometimes you have a very, very good turnover. And I think you don't... It's all these things that you have to put in perspective and see what is realistic for your own organization.
With that, actually, I think we're running out of time a bit. People are showing up to see the next performance now. But it doesn't start at 7:30, does it?
It is
7:30-ish.
It starts at 7:30.
It should
start. But we're ending at 7:30.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a big turnover. Then I am going to end the conversation now. So there's like a little bit of a chance for a formal talk or another glass of wine or whatever people need. But I want to say thank you so much to all four of you for coming and for sharing so generously of your thoughts and ideas. I don't know if we resolved the question of the role of art. I hope we never do. But yeah, thank you so much again. Thank you to all of you for coming. Thanks.
Can I say one thing?
Please do.